there is an explanation that it's probably not a foreign adversary or not an alien.
What is all the fuss about those drones in the skies over parts of the U.S.? The latest, plus a Catholic perspective from Father Robert Spitzer. The wise use of technology in spreading the faith. We talk to two Catholic thought leaders about the mix of artificial intelligence with the mission of the Catholic Church. Could it be true that the work of Catholic charities in Wisconsin is not sufficiently religious? The U.S. Supreme Court announces it will wade into an important legal case involving charities and taxes.
When Pope Francis was asked, "What is your favorite Christmas carol?" he replied, "It's Silent Night." We are going to Austria and we will show you where this song was born more than 200 years ago.
Our cameras travel to a small European village to bring us a reflection on one of the world's most beloved Christmas carols. EWTN News in Depth starts now.
I've certainly seen drones flying around. But this, I would say, is different. The volume of them, the regularity, even the odd hours.
It's all the buzz on the news and social media and among neighbors looking up at the night sky. What are those mysterious objects hovering above towns, military bases, and fields in several states? The White House, the president-elect, congressmen on Capitol Hill, and the Defense Department are all weighing in to address public alarm. Welcome to EWTN News in Depth. I'm Catherine Hadro. Everyone wants an explanation to that mystery in the sky. What appear to be aerial drones have been lighting up night skies in New Jersey and nearby states for weeks, sparking speculation about who's responsible, what are they looking for, and are the flying objects dangerous? There's been such a public outcry, the Federal Aviation Administration on Thursday banned drone operations in several areas of New York State and New Jersey until mid-January. Reporter Mark Irons tells us national security officials, politicians, and even the Catholic host of Father Spitzer's Universe are also expressing their opinions about these mysterious sightings.
What's going on in the skies? For weeks, reported drone sightings throughout the northeastern U.S. and beyond have baffled many.
It started becoming like every night, the same time, same places.
Everyone seems to be talking about it, from the president to police, even priests.
This has been something that's been abnormal for us.
Father Sigmund Poplowski is pastor of St. Cecilia Church in Rockaway, New Jersey. It's a few miles from Picatinny Arsenal, a U.S. military installation that has reported drone sightings in its airspace. At St. Cecilia's, Father Matt Darlak heard parishioners talk about the drones, so he checked the skies himself.
I was able to spot a number of drones flying over the sky here over in New Jersey.
Jim Clancy, the director of faith formation at the parish, has seen them too. He agrees with Father Darlak and other witnesses that they appear much bigger than drones a hobbyist might use, and they don't move like planes.
The irregular flight patterns are kind of what distinguishes them. You know, they'll hover and then they'll kind of move, or they'll kind of fly like in clusters. And so it's a bit unnerving, but I think an experience that most people at this point in this area seem to have kind of spotted them.
In Ohio, drone activity caused a temporary shutdown of airspace over Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And in New York, Stewart International Airport in the Hudson Valley had to briefly shut down runways. State lawmakers from New Jersey are among many of the public officials around the country looking for answers.
In the here and now, we need to figure out what's going on today and who's responsible for it.
Politicians on both sides of the aisle have expressed concern. Chris Smith, a Catholic and Republican congressman from New Jersey, demands more action.
Why don't we just follow one of them or shoot one of them down? You know, they're unmanned and do it in a way that does not put people on the ground at risk and decipher who it is. It could be China, it could be Russia, it could be Iran.
Earlier this week, President-elect Donald Trump sounded skeptical of the U.S. government's response to all the aerial activity.
Our military knows and our president knows, and for some reason they want to keep people in suspense.
But following his claim, the Pentagon press secretary said the drones are not U.S. military assets or part of any experimental program. And federal defense and intelligence agencies have said there is no national security or public safety threat. President Joe Biden said this.
Nothing nefarious, apparently. But they're checking it all out.
A joint statement from the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, FAA, and Department of Defense stated, the sightings to date include a combination of lawful commercial drones, hobbyist drones, and law enforcement drones, as well as manned fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters, and STARS mistakenly reported as drones. The statement said a federal investigation continues and acknowledged there have been a limited number of drone sightings in restricted airspaces, including around military facilities. Defense officials say sightings over military installations are not new, and detection and mitigation measures are in place.
The drones flown over our military bases could be a danger. That's why it's illegal. It's currently illegal, and the federal government has the capacity to investigate and stop drones that are in airspace over our military bases.
While demanding the Biden administration be more transparent if there are concerns, Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky blocked Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer from advancing a bill that would allow local law enforcement agencies to track aerial drones. Following a classified briefing from federal defense and intelligence agencies about the drones on Capitol Hill, Democratic Congressman Seth Magaziner did not express concern about any current threats to public safety. But he does think Congress could do more to prevent the possibility of nefarious drone activity in the future.
Yes, the possibility exists that a foreign adversary or some other bad actor could use a drone for a bad purpose anywhere in the United States. So we do need to update our laws and give law enforcement more authority to bring these drones down and to locate the people who are flying them. But as far as the specific sightings over New Jersey and other parts of the Northeast recently, no direct evidence of a bad actor being involved, as far as we know.
For more insight on the celestial happenings, we spoke to the host of Father Spitzer's Universe on EWTN. Father Robert Spitzer is president of the Magis Center of Reason and Faith. He thinks there's a reasonable explanation for what's going on, and he's shooting down any of those out-of-this-world theories.
This is too low-tech for an interstellar traveling alien culture. I just simply don't believe it. I don't think they're faking us out or anything like that. I would just caution anybody, you know, from thinking these are aliens. I don't believe that.
In the case of the drones, it seems many are looking upward for answers. But then again, that's something mankind has done for centuries.
We definitely, you know, we love the mystery of the heavens and things of that nature.
Of course, with the Magi looking up into the sky to see the star that led them to the Christ child.
And Father Poplawski pointed us to another scripture passage to stay spiritually grounded amid all the current buzz up above.
In Acts of the Apostles, where our Lord ascends into heaven and the angels say, you know, why are you staring into the sky? You know, you need to go and to go back and to pray and do the work that needs to be done.
Mark Irons, EWTN News in Depth.
Long before drones ever became a public concern, the Catholic Church has been navigating the world of technology and serving as a voice for moral and ethical ways to use it. One of the fastest growing inventions the church is navigating is artificial intelligence and how it can be used to benefit the Christian journey. But with any new technology, there have been some hits and misses.
Hello, Jesus. Do you have some advice for us in this time?
In these challenging times, remember that in the face of adversity, love and faith are your steadfast guides.
Last month, a church in Switzerland made headlines around the world when it debuted an artificially intelligent image of Christ. The so-called AI Jesus can speak dozens of languages and answer questions about the Bible. Though the parish placed it in the confessional, the AI is not meant to hear confessions, but to start a conversation on faith and the use of technology in Catholic spaces. This project is just one of the many ways Catholics are attempting to use artificial intelligence in the church, a new medium to evangelize and catechize an ever-evolving world. These attempts range from catechetical to controversial.
As a media company, Catholic Answers is dedicated to keeping an eye on the ever-changing media landscape we operate in, and this project has allowed us to dip our toes into the wonderful world of AI.
In April of this year, the lay-run apologetics and evangelization apostolate Catholic Answers introduced its audience to
Father Justin, an AI priest character. He is meant to help the human apologists at Catholic Answers, who are only able to answer a fraction of the thousands of queries sent their way. Father Justin quickly went viral on social media and received a wave of criticism. Many called him creepy. Others thought him a mockery of the priesthood. Some reported that Father Justin gave theologically inaccurate answers. Within days, Catholic Answers removed that iteration of AI. The character still exists to answer questions, but is now simply Justin, a lay theologian.
Feel free to ask anything about the Catholic faith whenever you're ready. I'm here to help. Is there something specific you'd like to explore or discuss?
Some artificial chatbots have found success, like Kate GPT and Magisterium AI, which draw on authoritative documents to explain the Catholic faith. On the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe earlier this month, the world met Juanito AI, a character inspired by Saint Juan Diego. The Spanish chatbot can answer questions and share historical context about Our Lady and her message, preparing Catholics for the 500th anniversary of her appearance in Tepeyac.
It is literally one of the most technologically advanced and sophisticated projects of its kind that has ever been pursued.
The Vatican has not shied away from exploring and utilizing artificial intelligence. In November, it unveiled a one-of-a-kind digital experience of St. Peter's Basilica, a digital twin created with the help of Microsoft, thousands of photos, and AI. The digital twin of the basilica not only allows anyone to explore its art and history, but aids in preservation by detecting missing tiles and unnoticed cracks. During a conference a few weeks earlier, the Pontifical Gregorian University invited tech experts to Rome to discuss the role of AI in the church. Matthew Sanders, one of the organizers, explains his hope for the church in this new age of artificial intelligence.
One thing that we're really trying to encourage is as a new generation of philosopher and theologian who understands emerging technology like AI, its impact on the world, and how it should be effectively used and not used. What I'm hoping to do is create more of an active dialogue where we can figure out what are the pain points for Catholics right now, and how can AI and emerging technology help address those.
To delve more into the role of artificial intelligence within the Catholic Church, we speak now with two thought leaders on the topic. Father Michael Baggett is Assistant Professor of Bioethics at the Pontifical Athenaeum Regina Apostolorum in Rome. He researches and teaches on the topic of transhumanism and emerging technologies. He's also an invited professor of theology at the Angelicum and the Catholic Institute of Technology. We're also joined by Juan Andres Munoz. He was previously the longtime digital director for CNN in Espanol, is a digital entrepreneur himself, and today we're grateful he's our editor-in-chief of Así Prensa and the Latin American editor for EWTN News. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. Father, to start us off, can you first give us a quick overview as to the Catholic Church's disposition on artificial intelligence? This is an evolving frontier, but how has the Church addressed this topic so far?
Well, thanks for having me, Catherine. I can say that Pope Francis has spoken very clearly and frequently about this important theme. I remember at the G7 summit, he spoke of how AI is a tremendous tool. It is a tool that reflects human creativity, the gift of creativity that comes from being made in the image and likeness of God. But it's a very unique tool because it's so all-encompassing. It affects practically every aspect of our life, medicine, education, business, family relations. So we have to be very attentive to the good and the bad, the positive and the negative. The Church is an expert in humanity, so she's very concerned about anything that fundamentally shapes our relationships. And we can see how AI is already profoundly shaping our relationship with our neighbors, but also even our relationship with God. Now, there are so many wonderful uses that the Church has highlighted. She's spoken of the impact on education, the fact that education can become ever more customized to the unique needs and interests of the user, how we can now even offer tutoring to people around the world in new languages or in math and science and other fields, a type of tutoring that was once accessible only to the rich and the elite. Now, suddenly, there are possibilities of that education becoming democratized and more accessible. Mm-hmm. We also look at the world of medicine, and the church has been very supportive of this.
Absolutely. Like you said, it is all-encompassing. Juan Andres, I want to put this image up on the screen for our viewers to see now. This is the AI-generated photo that appears to show Pope Francis wearing a designer puffer jacket that went absolutely viral last year. And it may seem innocent enough, but Juan Andres, are you concerned with how AI technology can generate false stories from the Vatican and how this may threaten Catholic journalism?
Yeah, 100%, Catherine, and thank you for having me today. We've all seen not just this example, but many, many examples every day. The technology is so available to anybody that these dangers are at hand every day. The potential for AI to create this convincing content is pervasive, and it's a wake-up call. We need to develop better media literacy and awareness because many people might not know about the potential of these technologies to create this content, and we have to make sure that our audiences and people in general really understand how powerful these technologies are and how they are improving by the day. Like every minute, AI gets better and better, and we are seeing this in the content that is being produced. So we have to see the AI, as the father was saying, that can be used for the good, but also for evil. And we have to make sure that it's more used for the good than the evil, mm-hmm. and adapt to this digital age and maintaining the integrity and the message and teachings of the church mm-hmm. while we adopt these technologies.
Absolutely. Father, as we mentioned, the so-called AI Jesus stirred up a lot of controversy last month. People perceived the AI as replacing the priest in the confessional. That being said, does AI have a place in the distribution of the sacraments? How do you think about that as a Catholic bioethicist and as a priest yourself?
Well, AI cannot distribute directly the sacraments. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He took on human flesh to redeem our fallen humanity, and he wishes to continue his work in his church. It's an extension of the incarnational principle, which means that grace comes to us in a very special way through human instruments. Now, I am privileged to be a priest. I know that I am weak and frail and sinful, but I have this treasure in earthen vessels, and I have a unique role to interact with others and distribute that grace in a special way. I can enter into a relationship of empathy with a penitent that no AI system can ever do, because no AI system can understand or share or respond well to emotions because it is not sentient. It has no inner life. So we as priests have a very unique and special role. So no AI system can directly replace that. What AI systems could do is indirectly support our sacramental life. And by that, I mean there are AI systems that help us, for instance, track our habits to see if we're growing in virtue or if we're falling into a predominant fault. They can help us understand ourselves better and give us reasonable, helpful, wise recommendations about how to grow in the spiritual life, or even suggestions about how to examine our conscience. But this is indirect. This is information. This is not that type of interpersonal relationship that the Lord wills in his sacramental system.
That's really clarifying and interesting. Juan Andres, what are ways that you're thinking about how the church and church communications can leverage AI technology for good? Do you see AI as something we should be wary of or something we should embrace as a church?
No, 100% we should embrace AI. AI is here to stay. It's not going to go away. And if you don't make use of it, you're going to be behind. Mm-hmm. And the church has always been in the forefront of technology adoption from the very beginning. But mm-hmm. we have the printing press and things like that the church led in the usage of. So I think for making the teachings of the church more accessible, for answering the common questions, we saw the example in the package that we just saw, how it can be used to answer questions about the faith as long as it's well executed. There are tools like Magisterium AI, which also was featured in the report. that is making an effort to do accurate information on the church available through the documents of the church. It can also help bridge the barriers of language and facilitate communication, because we are talking about the Catholic Church universal, and there's a lot of diversity in the church that sometimes can be enhanced and shared if we have tools like AI that can make this content available to maybe areas of the world that right now they don't have access to because of language barriers, for example. And also for education and evangelization, as long as we always keep the human oversight, which is critical in this case. Yeah. And obviously, like with a technical and a skilled control of the technology, you have to really understand the technology, how it works, the limitations, and also the possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Father, we mentioned in our report a number of different Catholic chatbots. You yourself sit on the Scholarly Advisory Board for Magisterium AI. Where should we as Catholics draw the line with these chatbots? Can we throw a complicated pastoral question its way? Should we be doing that?
Well, I think these can be great aids, a great first engagement with the patrimony of the church. What's wonderful about Magisterium AI and other resources available is that they point you to the original documents of the church or sound theological text. And the idea is that you start with your own personal interest or your own struggle or difficulty, and you're directed to the spot that will be most helpful for you. So you can then explore the richness of the church, but you are encouraged to look at the original context to avoid confusion or misunderstanding. And then after you've gone through that initial engagement, we always encourage contact with real-life people, with authority figures, whether they be priests or well-trained theologians, so that you can enter into a community of faith and understand not just the truths of the faith, but how these truths are embodied and lived out. So I think these systems are great so long as they aid and assist without replacing the human element, the interpersonal relationship. Just as I can go to a wonderful theological book or a piece of spiritual reading and gain great insight, I should not remain there. St. John of the Cross in the 16th century spoke of the danger of spiritual gluttony, of people who are excessive in their spiritual reading without actually taking the time to implement it or enter into the life of the community. So I think there's a danger of a kind of spiritual gluttony here. We might seek more and more information without translating that information into a lived experience in the church community. So we want to aid and facilitate that, not distract from that.
Seems like it's so important that we keep humanity at the center. And again, as you said, the word was made flesh. There is something so beautiful that AI can never replace. Gentlemen, thank you both. This is a fascinating conversation, and I appreciate both of your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Still to come on EWTN News In Depth, how do you define whether a charity is religious enough? The Supreme Court announces it will hear the case of Catholic Charities versus Wisconsin. During this Christmas season, we travel to the city known as the Gateway to the Arctic to discover how Catholicism is practiced in the northernmost part of the globe. And the Pope's favorite Christmas carol, maybe yours too. A peek inside Austria's Silent Night Chapel to learn the origin story of the famous song. We're back in a moment. What started out as a quiet term at the Supreme Court is getting busier and busier. The justices have agreed to take up a case centered around religious exemptions. It involves Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Superior, Wisconsin, and its work to serve people who are poor, elderly, or have disabilities. Wisconsin law allows religious groups to be exempt from state unemployment taxes as long as their activities are religious. State officials determined that Catholic Charities services are not inherently religious and therefore do not qualify for the tax exemption. In March, the Wisconsin Supreme Court weighed in and agreed the charity's activities of serving the poor are secular in nature. The court said Catholic Charities and its sub-entities neither attempt to imbue the program participants with the Catholic faith nor supply any religious materials to program participants or employees. The Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty is defending Catholic charities at the High Court. Attorney Nick Reeves says the case's impact could go well beyond the Catholic Church in Wisconsin.
And we think this is actually very important to a lot of Catholic charities around the country. Wisconsin has this law, but lots of other states have very similar laws too. And so this would apply to other Catholic ministries and actually a lot of religious minority ministries around the country that similarly might do things that are not typically or maybe traditionally considered religious, but are still very important and religious to that community.
To provide more insight on this case and the work of Catholic charities in Wisconsin, we're joined now by the head of the Diocese of Superior, Bishop James Powers. Your Excellency, thank you for joining us. First, can you speak to, has Catholic Charities in Superior, Wisconsin contributed to the Catholic mission of your diocese? And if so, how?
Oh, absolutely it has. Catholic Charities Bureau, Diocese of Superior, was established back in 1917, just shortly after the diocese had been formed. And since that time, it's reached out to try to help anybody who's in need, not just, Catholic or, but anybody, everybody reaching out to, disabled. And as such, if it weren't for Catholic Charities, I don't know how we as a diocese would begin to try to fulfill that mission of, charity, of caring for the least ones.
Mm. And as you said, it has a rich, more than 100-year history in your diocese.
Right.
Your Excellency, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled in March that, as I mentioned, Catholic Charities activities are not typical religious activities.
Right.
But is service to the poor an important tenet of our Catholic faith?
Oh, absolutely it is. It's part of the foundation of our faith. Go back to scriptures. How many times does Christ in the Gospels call us to reach out to the least ones, to help those in need? For the entire history of social teaching and the Catholic Church, that service to the poor, and without discrimination, without proselytizing, we're forbidden by the documents of the Church to discriminate on those two specifically causes.
Mm. Yes, I just want to emphasize that point that you just made and reiterate that to clarify, as Catholics, we are not called to serve just people who are Catholic. We are called to serve everyone, no matter their religious background, correct? We don't have to convert someone to serve them.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
And Your Excellency, is the Church better equipped to serve people than the state is equipped to serve people?
Well, I certainly believe it is. Again, we're the Catholic Charities is hands on, their feet on the ground. We know our people. We know the needs, and we're better. That compassion is so important when reaching out as well.
Can you speak to, this aspect of church teaching of subsidiarity, of the role that we have in attending to those who are close to us?
Well, yeah, it's certainly part of the social teaching. An important part of the social teaching is that, the closest point of contact is the best point of contact. And so as the church throughout the diocese, rather than trying to depend on the state or government to determine the needs, to be able to supply those needs.
Mm. On that note, are you concerned about the courts probing into how, quote, religious a ministry is? Isn't that a profoundly religious question?
Well, absolutely. I think that's, the real issue. You know, is the court competent to determine whether or not our activities, our mission as church in the Diocese of Superior is religious or not? Absolutely, it's religious. You know, and again, it's founded on all the principles of our Catholic social teaching, and it's certainly founded on the commands of Jesus. You know, those two great commands to, you know, love God with all that we are, but to love our neighbor as ourself, and that loving of neighbor demands that we reach out in charity to help those that are less fortunate, those that are in need of help, and, you know, to do that in person, how important that is.
Mm. And finally, Your Excellency, is this a case that you think other Catholic bishops and other religious leaders, for that matter, should be paying attention to? Could this ultimately affect them and their ministries as well?
Well, definitely. I think it's one that we all have to be aware of, because if the state of Wisconsin can do this, what's to prevent other states from doing it as well? And where do we stop? You know, and when we're told that we have to deny who we are in order to claim to be religious, how can we as Catholics really fulfill our mission as the, you know, the Catholic Church and the Diocese of Superior or wherever? Mm-hmm. You know, we're, the sacramental part of the church is important. There's no question about that. But out of that sacramental life of the church comes that call to mission. Mm-hmm. And to split them, we're just denying who we are.
Mm. Well, we will be keeping a close eye on the Supreme Court and this case. Bishop Powers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. God bless.
At that time, the Vatican had established a North Pole mission.
The North Pole mission.
When we come back, we go to the snowy north for a chilly wintertime look at the effort to take Catholicism to the Arctic Circle. When you hear about the North Pole around Christmas time, the immediate association is with Santa Claus or Old Saint Nick. Well, throw in the North Pole's link to the Vatican, and you come up with something called the North Pole Mission and the world's northernmost Catholic cathedral. Correspondent Colin Flynn traveled to Norway to learn about this Catholic life in the cold Arctic North.
This is the city of Tromsø in the north of Norway, 300 kilometers inside the Arctic Circle. It's actually called the capital of the Arctic. It's famous for its spectacular northern lights and its long, dark polar winters. With its wooden houses, some dating back to the late 1700s, and surrounded by stunning nature and wildlife, Tromsø is a magical town. The polar nights last for almost 2 months in the winter, and during this period, the sun never fully rises, so the residents are lucky to get about 2 hours of light every day. Then after around 1 p.m, the rest of the day is in darkness. But the payoff for enduring the darkness is the occasional burst of this. The Northern Lights, Mother Nature's spectacular light show in the sky. Charged particles from the sun bouncing off the Earth's magnetic field. The colors and patterns dance around the sky, an awe-inspiring sight. Amidst the polar darkness, here, light is something precious. And among the things that make this town unique is its cathedral. And as you can see, it's not a huge stone structure towering over the town with a tall spire, but it is the most northern cathedral in the world. When Mass is finished, the locals meet for coffee and buns to warm up in this cold land. Father Arnie Marco is a Norwegian priest, and we sit down inside the world's closest cathedral to the North Pole.
This church was constructed in the end 1850s. I think it was finished 1861. At that time, the Vatican had established a North Pole mission.
The North Pole mission?
Yes. It covered a huge area of the northern Europe and even Canada.
The parish of Tromso was included in the Vatican's North Pole mission, which had been established by Pope Pius IX in 1855 to evangelize regions within the Arctic Circle. But due to the harsh conditions, the mission was ended in 1869. The parish of Tromso then became its own diocese, with the record of having the cathedral closest to the top of the world.
Yes, the church is dedicated to Our Lady, in Norwegian Vår Frue. And the parish covers not only the city, but nearly the whole province of Troms.
For the people who live here, Christmas is a magical time. A big emphasis is put on the town's Christmas decorations, and the lighting of their Christmas tree brings out all the families. However, life during the winter months can be difficult, with heavy snowfall, freezing polar winds, and of course, the darkness. But the locals try and focus on the beauty.
Isn't this beautiful, Celia? We're sitting here in this coffee shop right in the middle of Tromso.
Really beautiful.
How would you describe the town?
It gets really dark, but if you take your D vitamin and get enough sleep and socialize, then it can be okay. And the town makes it a really good job to just make it cozy with all the lights and it's cold, but just put on a jacket and you're fine.
You're fine.
In Norway, only about 3% of the country is Catholic, with the majority being immigrants from other countries. And here in Tromso, there are people in this parish from over 100 countries. And Celis is one of those in the minority.
A lot of the young Catholics are mostly international, like students. We are not a lot of people, but those in the Catholic Church, we take care of each other, and it's just feels right to me, yeah.
Can it be difficult sometimes to be a young Norwegian Catholic?
Yes, it is. I do feel a little alone, but then that's why it's nice to have the young Catholics too.
So you have a support group there,
yes.
Yeah.
Father Arnie brings me down to the water, where he likes to watch the fishing boats coming and going from the harbour.
We are here at the harbour of the city of Tromsø. This is the harbour for the smaller boats.
And I know that you like to come down here and look at the boats and the ships coming in, going out.
That's because I have a first formation as a civil engineer in marine engineering. I'm specialized in yarding, and I like to see ships constructed.
Before becoming a priest, Father Arnie had graduated from college as a marine engineer and was on his way to work for a large vessel manufacturer when his mind and heart started to change.
When did you decide to make the switch from your life as an engineer to that of a man of God?
The question entered into my soul, so to speak. The deeper questions about existence, about life, moved me into this direction, slowly but surely.
His parents were not too pleased that he was giving up a promising career for a life in the priesthood, but he persisted. And his friends, too, couldn't understand what he was doing. They believed faith and science couldn't go together.
They think you have to choose between knowledge and faith. And if you choose faith, it's because you don't understand the reality. You believe in something that does not exist, God. And for myself, it came to a point where I was asking myself, what is really more important to me in my life?
Hjertelig
And I felt much more myself, so to speak. And of course, I did understand this is only possible if it's God's call to me. And it has given me so much different and new experiences and have deepened my faith in a way that I could not believe when I entered in that time. No?
And now he gets to enjoy both worlds, living out his priestly vocation while staying close to his former life on the sea.
And of course, sometimes I want to enter them to see and study them, but I will always feel connected to the ocean and to the vessels of the oceans.
It's a nice thing, isn't it?
True. My hope is that I can keep on doing my ministry as I do now, and that maybe I can bring some light in the darkness of the world.
Bringing light to these polar winters.
Yeah, hopefully. Yes.
In Tromsø, Norway, Colm Flynn, EWTN News in Depth.
Thanks to column and videographer Patrick Leonard for that beautiful story. And if you listen closely, you heard a few different renditions of the Christmas carol Silent Night. Coming up later, a report from the small Austrian village where that classic originated. Next, news headlines in the Week in Review.
It's sad, like, how often these are happening and how mental health is declining, and it doesn't seem like there's anything anybody can do to stop it. It's horrible.
A resident of Madison, Wisconsin expresses shock about a school shooting happening in the final week before Christmas break. It was the 83rd school shooting in the United States this year, according to data compiled by CNN. The horror of a 15-year-old student opening fire on Monday at the Wisconsin private Christian school tops the Week in Review. A 14-year-old fellow student and a school staff member died, and the shooter killed herself. Police are still trying to determine a motive in the shooting at Abundant Life Christian School, a very rare situation in which the shooter was female. In the vast majority of school shootings, the gunman is a young male. As investigators scour her writings and social media, her parents are said to be cooperating. The shooter had two handguns, and police do not yet know how she obtained them. Several hundred people attended a candlelight vigil at the Wisconsin State Capitol building the day after the shooting. A student who was in the school at the time said it was hard to process her emotions.
Most of us were crying. We went to the corner. We just hunkered down there. Our teacher, she was talking to us very quietly, of course, like whispering. It felt like we were there, like, forever.
FBI investigators say they are now looking into a 20-year-old California man who admitted he had been messaging the shooter, plotting another attack on an unnamed government building with a gun and explosives. They do not yet know how that communication may or may not have influenced the school shooting. Abundant Life Christian School is a non-denominational school with about 400 students in pre-kindergarten classes through high school. The shooter wounded six others in the attack. Two students remain hospitalized with life-threatening injuries. A Texas judge refused on Thursday to throw out criminal charges accusing a former school's police chief of putting children at risk in connection with the Uvalde Elementary School shooting in 2022. 19 students and two teachers died when police waited more than 70 minutes to enter a school and confront the shooter, as many of those who eventually died lay wounded and bleeding. Former Chief Pete Arredondo and former Officer Adrian Gonzalez are charged with multiple counts of abandoning or endangering a child. They have pleaded not guilty. The Uvalde police response is often cited as the prime example of what first responders should not do. Training now focuses on aggressively entering a school to neutralize a shooter as quickly as possible. Luigi Mangione has been extradited to New York City to face first-degree murder charges in the death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, who was gunned down earlier this month. He began his day on Thursday in a Pennsylvania court, and after he waived extradition, was taken immediately by NYPD private plane, then helicopter, to a downtown Manhattan federal court, where he faced new federal charges of stalking and murder by firearm. That federal charge could bring the death penalty if he's convicted in the insurance executive's murder. A federal criminal complaint cited a notebook in Mangione's possession, which had an entry expressing hostility toward the healthcare industry and his desire to, quote, whack an insurance company CEO. A top Russian official and his aide are dead after a bomb detonated outside his Moscow apartment. Ukraine is claiming responsibility for the assassination. An explosive hidden on an electric scooter killed 54-year-old Lieutenant General Igor Kiprilov outside his building on Tuesday. Russia had since detained a citizen of Uzbekistan on suspicion of planting the bomb for Ukraine. He says he was offered a large sum of money and resettlement in a European Union country for the crime. Kirillov headed Russia's Radiation, Biological and Chemical Protection Forces. He was under sanctions in several countries and accused by Ukraine of allowing the use of banned chemical weapons on the warfront. Though considered a bold move from Ukraine, war analysts say the assassination is unlikely to aid its struggling war effort. Ousted Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad says he never intended to flee his country after the collapse of his regime. That's according to a statement posted on Monday to social media channels belonging to the Syrian presidency. The note claims he evacuated to a Russian military base to, quote, oversee combat operations, and that Moscow requested the move. There is no confirmation the statement is authentic, but if so, would be the first time Assad has publicly commented since a rebel group took control of Syria and ended the Assad's family brutal 50-year regime earlier this month. The White House has confirmed the final international trip of Joe Biden's presidency will be a visit with Pope Francis at the Vatican in January. The president accepted the Holy Father's invitation to visit him during a phone call on Thursday, during which he thanked the Pope for his work to advance human rights and to protect religious freedoms. Mr. Biden will also meet with Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni to discuss global challenges during the three-day trip beginning January 9th. The White House says his talks with Pope Francis will concentrate on efforts to advance peace around the world. Pope Francis made a quick visit to Corsica in the Mediterranean last Sunday. The trip marks the first time a pope has traveled to the French island. Pope Francis received a warm welcome upon his arrival. The Holy Father said Sunday Mass outdoors beneath a looming statue of famed French general and Corsica native Napoleon Bonaparte. During his homily, he asked the locals to share their dynamic faith with an increasingly secular Europe. Unlike the secular France it is a part of, Corsica's population is mostly Catholic. Religious associations and confraternities have a long history in Corsican culture, and the island is currently home to more than 90 of them. The Holy Father reached another milestone this week on Wednesday. Pope Francis celebrated his 88th birthday, making him one of the oldest serving popes in the church's history. Despite his age and some health issues, he maintains a busy schedule from his papal trips to general audiences and meeting with country leaders. On his plane ride back to Rome, Pope Francis got to celebrate his birthday a little early when Vatican journalists gifted him a birthday cake. This week marks 25 years since the founding of the shrine Mother Angelica built, the shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament in Hanceville, Alabama. It opened and was consecrated on December 19, 1999. And ever since, the Poor Clare Nuns of Perpetual Adoration have held constant watch with our Eucharistic Lord. The shrine celebrated the anniversary on Thursday with Mass, a rosary, and a Eucharistic healing service. Mother Angelica decided to move her order to the Alabama countryside after EWTN's growth at its Irondale headquarters made it difficult for the sisters to continue their contemplative life there. Now the shrine serves as a home for the nuns and a place of retreat for other religious, priests, and lay people. The chapel is inspired by Franciscan churches and monasteries of the 13th century. The centerpiece of the shrine is the almost 8-foot-tall monstrance that enthrones the Most Blessed Sacrament. The shrine is a beautiful testament to Mother Angelica's unwavering faith. We'll be right back. Next, the story behind one of the world's most beautiful Christmas carols. Tis the Advent season, and so everywhere you turn, you hear the sound of Christmas music. There is a rich history behind many of our most beloved Christmas carols, including one of the best known, Silent Night. Reporter Rudolf Gehrig takes us to Austria to find out more about the origins of a song with such special meaning as we near the day of Christ's birth.
Silent Night is one of the most popular Christmas carols in the world. In 2018, Pope Francis revealed that it is his favorite.
Saint Augustine once said, "He who sings prays twice." So where words come to an end, music comes in. And where music doesn't quite get anywhere, words can help again.
Johannes Zeinler is teaching at the University of Music and Performing Arts in Vienna. Like many musicians, he has a special connection to Silent Night.
Silent Night is by far the most emotional song that I have to play as a musician in the entire liturgical year. For me personally, there's no Christmas without Silent Night. It's also somehow the highlight of the Christmas liturgy. You actually save it until the end of the Mass.
Silent Night is not only Pope Francis' favorite Christmas carol, but is famous around the world and has already been translated into about 300 languages. Here, in this small town in Austria, it was played for the first time at Christmas in 1818.
This place is very special because the St. Nicholas Church was here, where the song Silent Night was sung for the first time.
As the organ was broken, Father Josef Mohr played Silent Night on guitar that night. The original St. Nicholas Church was demolished in 1910 after severe flood damage and rebuilt elsewhere. The Silent Night Chapel was built on the hill that was created from the rubble of the original church. Josef Bruckmoser and the Silent Night Association look after the legacy of the popular Christmas carol. Why don't you take us back to the night when the song was played for the first time here? What happened there?
We don't know exactly what happened there, but it is fact that somehow the organ wasn't working that day. And that's why Josef Mohr and Francis Xavier Gruber wrote this song together. Josef Mohr had written the lyrics 2 years earlier in Mariafar, and so he went to the schoolteacher Franz Xaver Gruber and said, "Can't you create a nice melody for it so we can sing it tonight?" It wasn't very common back then to play the guitar in church. On the contrary, it was frowned upon because the guitar was seen as a secular instrument.
Years later, Oberndorf is still proud to be the birthplace of this song.
I love this song, and I think I could listen to it all my life.
Caroline Schink runs the Oberndorf Tourist Office and organizes an Advent market every year, which takes place from November until Christmas Eve. Around 60,000 visitors come to the small town every year.
We
have a lot of international guests, many Americans, New Zealanders, Australians too, and of course Europeans, mainly Germans. Yes, they just love our Silent Night song. It's a song that connects us and makes us feel good. It's a song of peace. You can just feel that when you listen to it and when you sing it.
Yes, that is the basic message of this song. That with the birth of Jesus Christ, God has come close to us in Jesus. That peace has come and that Jesus is actually born anew in every person, especially when we fulfill the gospel, which is a gospel of peace.
Father Nikolaus Erber is the parish priest of Oberndorf for 22 years now and knows that Silent Night also has a deep theological meaning.
When you celebrate Christmas Mass,
you can hear that Joseph Moore has summarized the text of the Holy Night in this song. For example, the Isaiah text about the peace that is promised.
Von diesem Frieden, der verheißen ist, und der zweite Lesung ist.
In the second reading, says in the letter to Titus, the kindness and generous love of God our Savior appeared. That is the background for this song, which he has used in the lyrics.
Silent Night is considered a peace song because it is widespread throughout the Christian world. And there are these stories from the world wars that on Christmas Eve, the soldiers on the front line stopped shooting and sung Silent Night in the Western world, just as we have the situation in Europe today with Russia's war against Ukraine. This carol is something that will probably play a role there on Christmas Eve.
As the world faces the threat of war once more, a small chapel perched on a small hill in a small Austrian town stands as a timeless reminder of the true message of Christmas, with a song that has rung out for more than 200 years, Christ the Savior is born. In Oberndorf, Austria, Rudolf Gehrig, EWTN News in Depth.
And with that, all of us here at EWTN News in Depth wish you a blessed Christmas as we celebrate the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm Catherine Hadro. Next week at this time, we invite you to join us for a special edition of EWTN News in Depth as we bring you our best interviews of 2024. Until then, God bless.